You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Here's Sagan, winds up, shoots, fired it wide with a slap shot. Came back toward the line on the far side. It's held by Klingberg. Near side, Sagan, one-time shot. Stop, rebound, they score. Jamie Benn on the putback. 4-3 Dallas on their second power play goal of the night.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. We'll get you set for the Jets and the Predators taking place later this evening. 6 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290 as the Jets continue their four-game road trip with another key Central Division matchup in Nashville against the Predators. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. I'm alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. And we start today's program off by looking back at Thursday evening's 6-3 defeat at the hands of the Dallas Stars in Dallas, Texas. A 6-3 score which certainly was not emblematic of the game that was played on the ice between those two teams. But at the end of the day, the result is the same for the Winnipeg Jets. A defeat to a Central Division opponent. And they continue with their struggles that they've been experiencing over the last week to 10 days. Good morning, gentlemen. Good afternoon, rather. How are you both doing?
Yeah, doing good, Drew. Under the circumstances, right? So you mentioned that the score wasn't really indicative of the play on the ice, and there were a couple of empty net goals, but it's another loss, right? Yeah. And the Jets are in a big-time slump right now. They've lost four in a row, and they're not playing well enough defensively. We talked about it on the Wednesday show, and that just continued against Dallas. Didn't have any problem with the way they played offensively. I mean, they could have had a couple more goals. Mm-hmm. I thought Mark Scheifele had a couple of good chances there, one in the second, one in the third, but another breakaway goal is given up to Alex Hemsky. He had another breakaway later in the game, by the way. So they've given up, I don't know how many breakaways in the last couple games. It's probably five or six now.
Yeah, it's too many, that's for sure.
It's too many, Drew. And again, you know, they're just not getting the type of defense that you need to beat good teams in the Central Division. This Dallas Stars team is, in my opinion, the best team in the Western Conference. And I realize they're the best team points-wise right now, but I think they're the best overall team. The defense has gotten better. Jim Nill's done a great job of bringing in a couple of defensemen, the main one being Johnny Oduya, and, you know, solidifying that core of Ben and Sagan and Spezza with Patrick Sharp. This is a good team. So you got to keep that in mind. The Jets lost to a good team here. It's not like they lost to one of the worst teams in the NHL. This is one of the best teams in the NHL. You have to factor that in. But I thought they could have played better. Gave up a couple of power play goals. The power play, I know you want to talk about it later, Drew. Mm-hmm. The power play hasn't been good. It's really been struggling dating back to the Philadelphia game at home. And even before that, I think you saw even the Montreal game, they were having trouble getting the power play going. But again,
one for the last 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, Richie. And they got to tighten it up. It's really as simple as that, in my opinion. And this team has the ability to do that. I think Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien on that top pair, they can play better. I think Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba, they can play better. And I think they would tell you that, too. Giving up way too many chances, way too many goals, and they're putting themselves in a position where they can't come back in games, because I know that, you know, Tyler Myers got them tied up there. But you kind of got the feeling that that game was always going to go to Dallas. At least I did.
Yeah,
with the firepower that
they were outplayed.
Have.
They were outplayed.
Especially,
I didn't think the 4-3, they were outplayed. I thought it was fairly evident that they were outplayed. And the second half of the game, they improved their play. They switched the defensive pairings in the middle of the second period. Mm-hmm. That seemed to help. They didn't capitalize on their chances. And
well, you got to look at the Brian Little. Brian Little gets high-sticked, and the Jets have a four-minute power play right after they tie the game, a golden opportunity. And so I know watching at home, when they didn't capitalize on that opportunity, they weren't really that close to even capitalizing on that four-minute power play. As soon as that power play expired, you sort of thought to yourself, okay, you know, Dallas is going to take advantage of that. You can't pass up those kind of opportunities against a good team like Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, those are the chances that you do have to take advantage of, Drew. I mean, if you're looking at defensively, I mean, last few games, Minnesota and Dallas to be particular, they haven't been very impressive defensively. But let's be honest here, guys. There were some performances earlier in the year that weren't very strong defensively, but the goaltenders were saving all but one or two shots a night, putting up 914 and 930 save percentages. That's not going to last the whole season, and we mentioned that at the time. And what's happening now is, you know, certainly the goaltenders aren't without blame here, but the defensive breakdowns might be a bit worse. But I don't think there's been a sudden drop from tremendously played defensive games to very poor. It's been pretty poor. Mm-hmm. And you need to be able to score, outscore the opposition if you're going to play that style, and the Jets haven't been able to do that. And when I was talking to Rick about it on Thursday night, if you want to kind of simplify it, Ezzy, think to yourself, okay, you're playing against Sagan, Ben, and Sharp, best line in the league. In my opinion, that's the best line in the league.
Yeah.
And you're going up and you're saying, and the matchups were, at least for the first half of the game, when they kept these pairings together, we're going to match up Byfuglien and Enstrom against the best line in the league. I mean, to me, that doesn't inspire defensive confidence.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, to the Jets' credit, they badly outplayed the Stars in the second period, outshooting them, I think it was 15-6 in the second period there. So the Jets had a fairly solid game. I agree with Rich. I mean, if you wanted to give the advantage momentum-wise or pace-wise, it would go to Dallas. And then Dustin Byfuglien, we talked about it Wednesday, takes another penalty, and it leads to Dallas getting a goal. We talked about it. If you give Dallas three or four power play chances, because they have one of the best power plays in the league, they're going to get one or two power play goals most likely,
yeah,
depending on how many power plays you give them.
Well, you gave them four, and they scored two goals.
Exactly. And to Richie's point, this is the type of team that you got to bring your A game. And I realize that's a cliche from the Claude Noel era, but it's true. And defensively, more so than offensively, the Jets are a top offensive team. I think the numbers bear it out. The Jets are a top 10 offensive team. And I think they can be a top 10 defensive team as well. They're going through struggles right now, and they're going to have to pull themselves out of it. It's not getting easier. The Nashville Predators are fourth here in the Western Conference. They've got one of the best defenses in the league. I think we ranked them second or third, along with the Minnesota Wild up there. You know, St. Louis Blues, all the best defenses seem to be in the Central Division, by the way.
The best teams.
Rangers,
you can't afford these types of mistakes. And, you know, you heard Andrew Ladd talk about it. You heard Brian Little talk about it yesterday at practice. These guys know they're in a slump, and they know they got to get out of it. Unfortunately, it's not just those guys, because Blake Wheeler and Brian Little and Andrew Ladd, they were fine against Dallas. I think right now they're struggling with confidence defensively. And again, that's the entire team. It's not just one or two players.
The loss is the loss, and you can't overstate it. But I from my perspective, as just sitting back watching the game, given what happened in Minnesota, where they really were very bad, you know, in Minnesota, I took a lot of positives out of the game against Dallas. I know that's a loss, and you don't get any points for that. But you know, had they gone into Dallas and been absolutely blown out, if it had been another 5-1 game at any point in time, I would say, okay, now I'm really, there's significant concerns here. Watching that Dallas game, though, I was, at the end of the game, I said, okay, you know, disappointing that you lose, but there's positives that you can take out of this game that you couldn't take out of the game against Minnesota, or the game against Philadelphia before that, or the game against Montreal the week before. You know, pregame, you heard Paul Maurice say he wanted to see the Jets play with pace. I thought the Jets played with significant pace against the Dallas Stars. I took more positives out of the loss than I did negatives.
I disagree. I just think they got outplayed. And I think that good teams don't go for the moral victories.
I agree. Moral victories are for losers. I would agree with that comment.
Dallas is a really good team. We know that. Drew, I just thought that they were lucky to be tied after the first period. Second period, they turned it around. I thought after the defensive pairing switched around, Dallas played with the lead for a large part of the. And I thought Dallas backed off a bit and said, okay, you know, we're going to. And Dallas had the puck a lot. And
Dallas is a better team than the Jets.
Dallas is a better team than the Jets right now. I think that they're also playing a lot better.
I agree
than
with
the Jets.
That
too. I mean, maybe those are mutually exclusive. But I didn't think there was too much encouragement. I thought they're giving up breakaways. I think their defensive play is lax. I think their offense, they're mixing up lines at the end of the game. I don't think they have confidence there. I didn't take too much from it that I thought was great. I mean, I can see your point about some things being encouraging, but Paul Maurice took a stab. I mean, in the post-game interview, I thought it was totally PR, saying damage control, meaning I've been hard on these guys, I've leaned on them a bit, and they're not reacting that well. I'm going to back off, be a little more positive, which might work. And, you know, they're going to get some bounces too. But I think right now the team has to be able to play defense. And that starts with your defenseman.
Yeah.
I mean, it's team defense, sure, and defense is not exclusively the six guys. The six guys aren't carrying their weight. They're missing guys. They're missing guys behind them, in front of the net, at the offensive blue line. Basic NHL stuff, if you're watching, that you have to make sure you're aware of. And I just think it's a sloppy play right now. And their offense, as you speak about their offense, and the Jets can't create offense. And the defensemen help tremendously in creating that offense.
Well,
but you can't
create
that offense at the expense of defense. That's the balance right now. Right now, they're on the wrong side of that.
If you remember it, in the first period there, Brian Little collides with Kari Lehtinen, and Andrew Ladd shoots into what he thought was an empty net, and it was, yeah, I believe, Jason Demers who makes the save there. The Jets could have gone up 3-1. So you're right, Drew. I mean, it's a one-goal game up until, what, 2 minutes left in the game, and then, yeah, they get some empty
four,
net goals
for
Roussel and Vern Fiddler.
But so that puck hits Myers in front, right?
Right, that's true.
And Hemske has the other breakaway.
Myers made the big save off of his skate. Right. So
certainly warts in the Jets game. Certainly warts in the Jets game, but I didn't think that they were worse than they were against Minnesota. So that tells me that they're trending
against Minnesota,
right? That they're trending upwards at the very least.
Yeah, and so you take some solace in that. But at the end of the day, Richie's right, and it feels like we're a broken record here, Drew. We're playing a broken record, yeah, whatever you want to say. But you can't give up that breakaway to Hemske, you know, Enstrom and Byfuglien out there. And on the fourth goal, the Jamie Benn winner, Stuart and Trouba are out there, and Trouba goes out to block the Sagan shot. And then there's two guys in front of the net, and Jamie Benn kind of has an easy tap in there. You know, I'm not blaming everything on Stuart and Trouba there, but again, bad.
Stafford jumps out too and, right, aggressively goes at Spets and misses him.
It's bad defensive coverage. I think, again, this goes back to what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks here, kind of the same length of the Jets' slump here. Is that, are the Jets not playing well defensively because they're taking too many chances? Are they just not playing well defensively, period? You know, forget the offense. The point is, anybody can tell you, any observer of the Jets, Drew, can tell you over the last couple weeks, going back to the Montreal game, they're just simply not playing well defensively, and that's got to improve. And aside from that, there's not much more you can say because the Jets are getting the goals right now. The Jets can go, if the Jets, and we saw that, those two, yeah, quick goals, and you got to give credit to Adam Lowry, who uses his speed, and Thorpe,
that was the best,
who goes to the net.
He skated as well as I've seen him skate all year on Thursday.
So you got to give all four lines credit. I didn't think the forwards were the issue. It's the defense. It's got to improve. And again, it's got to be some help from the forwards as well there. So it's not all on those three pairs for the Jets, and it's not all on the goaltending. I mean, Pavlik's only weak goal, I would say, was the first goal, the Klingberg goal. There might have been some traffic in front of the net. But aside from that, a lot of the other goals, you can't really blame on Pavlik. And again, they got to tighten that up because even though the Nashville Predators aren't the offensive juggernaut that the Stars are,
that's right,
they can score goals. They scored seven goals the other night.
Yeah,
so
they scored seven against Ottawa the other night. You know, I look at it this year and I look at it back at last year. There were sort of two slumps for the Jets in the course of the season last year, right off the start of the season after they won their first game in Phoenix, and they went on that, I believe it was a five-game slide, whatever it was.
Yeah, and they turned it around against Chicago, the Rangers. Yeah.
Right, turned it around, and then right after the All-Star
turned it
break.
Around against Chicago, the Rangers. I thought it was a turning point in the season last year, Drew, and they did that. I believe they won both games 1-0 or 2-1, whatever
it was. 1-0. Back-to-back games on a Saturday, I think on a Friday and on a Saturday, or a Saturday and a Sunday.
Whatever it was. But my point on that is they won those games, and I thought at that point in the season, really, I thought it was a turning point for Paul Maurice's tenure here, they realized they could win by playing defense. There's no resemblance to that team right now.
There isn't right now, and I'm very curious as to see how they're going to come out tonight against a team that isn't a firepower juggernaut. I know they scored seven goals against the Senators, but the Predators aren't an offensive juggernaut by any stretch.
It's a really good team, though.
Yeah, it's a very good team, but it's a very good team because they know what they are, and they're very responsible, and they're not going to take any chances, and they're not going to play fire wagon hockey in Nashville for the most part. Peter Laviolette has done a very good job implanting on those players what they need to do to be successful. And so I'm curious to see how the Jets respond against a team that doesn't have the offensive firepower like the Dallas Stars do. And we'll see, you know, if the Jets continue to sort of revamp and get back to a winning way of playing hockey on a regular basis. Let's head to break. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Predators. We'll tell you about the new defensive pairings as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Shortly after 12:15 in the afternoon, a Saturday afternoon here in Winnipeg, shortly after 7:15 in Paris, This, of course, bringing us back from break, Eagles of Death Metal. They were playing last night at the Bataclan Concert Hall in Paris when the tragedy, the terrorism attacks unfolded. You know, we're sitting here talking about hockey, and we're going to continue to talk about hockey, but, you know, rest assured we understand and we know all too well that what we're talking about in sports in general certainly are a distraction, and they are certainly, you know, are not nearly as important as we often put as the importance we often put on them, especially sort of a reminder, gives us some perspective when we see what has happened overseas in Paris last night. And our hearts go out to everybody in Paris and everybody affected by the terrorist attacks last night in Paris. You guys have you been to Paris, either of you?
No.
It's the prettiest city in the world. It's like no other city in the world. And I mean, there's great cities all over the place. New York City is a great city. London, Tokyo, all these sort of world cities. There is no city quite like Paris when it comes to just the straight attractiveness of it. And it hurts people. It hurts you in the heart when you see the beauty of it shattered in the course of just absolute heinous behavior. That, you know, I don't have the proper vocabulary, and the words I want to use are not radio friendly to describe the atrocities that took place last night in Paris. So that's some Eagles of Death Metal. We'll play them a little bit throughout the show today. Great band, and you know, unfortunately, they're forever tied to the horror of last night in Paris, France. The Jets, awkward transition later, are in Nashville tonight, of course, to play the Predators. A 6 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290. We're going to be joined next segment by Willie Donick, the play-by-play voice of the Predators, to discuss that franchise. Predators, again, you know, just churning along like they always do, at least, you know, since Peter Laviolette has taken over there. They're another good team. 9-3-3 to start the year so far. They don't score a ton, but they don't give up a lot of goals either. I mean, I sort of expected Nashville to take a step back after their performance last year. I thought they caught people off guard.
Yep.
But you know, here we are 15 games into the season, and there's no sign whatsoever that they're not going to be just as good as they were last season.
And one of the reasons for that, Drew, is because they only won 6 of their last 23 games. So if you remember, they were right at the top of the Western Conference standings for the majority of the season. Then they slipped just kind of the last couple of months of the season. Mm-hmm. But this is a very well-coached team with one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, we know that, and Shea Weber, who you guys know how big of a fan I am of Shea Weber. He's been a staple of the Canadian Olympic teams. He's certainly a top three defenseman. You could probably make the argument he might be the best defenseman when he's on his game, right? Aside from that, you've got a lot of depth up front. You don't have necessarily the most intimidating group of centers, Richie. They re-signed Mike Fisher and Mike Ribeiro in the offseason. And for me, when you get into the playoffs against better teams like the Chicago Blackhawks, pardon me, more deep teams like the mm-hmm. Chicago Blackhawks or St. Louis Blues, you run into some trouble mm-hmm. there. But you've got a lot of depth, and they have other guys that can score. They get a lot of offense from their defense, whether it's Weber or Roman Josi or Seth Jones, who just keeps getting better and better. It's hard to believe that he's only 22 years old, or is he even 22 years old?
Not
21
yet,
years
21.
Old. So it's a very deep team, and as we mentioned, it's a well-coached team. Of course, we got to mention now Hall of Famer Phil Housley's on that coaching staff as
sure.
well.
Assistant coach there.
Yeah, so it's not going to be an easy win, and we mentioned the other night they beat the Senators 7-5. It's a team, though, that even though they don't make a lot of mistakes, you can get some opportunities on this team, and they're not going to give you a lot. I mean, even though they gave up 5 goals the other night, it's a scrappy team too. It's a tough team to play against. Peter Laviolette teams have always been difficult to play against. The Philadelphia teams, when they were going, were tough to play against, especially the team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2010. So the Jets have got to clean up the defensive zone first and foremost, Richie. But it's you're not going to have to shut down as many top guys as you did with the Dallas Stars.
Well, that's true. Nashville's almost scored as much as Minnesota has this year, and Minnesota had some injuries too, you know, not having Parise there. So it's not a team that can be dangerous. I agree with you, though, the depth-wise and talent, top-end talent-wise, is going to be an issue. I mean, when you have Mike Fisher drawing in between a guy like James Neal, who can really shoot it, and a guy like Philip Forsberg, who really came into his own last year, you really ideally want somebody who has better skills, better offensive skills. And so you don't have that. So you have kind of the two veterans who are older than you'd probably think, Fisher and Ribeiro, up the middle. And you have guys on the wings, you know, who are, I think their wings are all right. You probably want to push one more center up there and push everybody down a group. ideally probably keep Ribeiro at the two, have Fisher at three, mm-hmm. and then have a number one center. Now, of course, those aren't growing on trees, and you are hearing a possibility of Nashville jumping into the Patrick Marleau sweepstakes, which we'll alleged sweepstakes, which we'll talk about later. But this is a team that's going to play solid defensively, as he mentioned and spoke well about, you know, the talent on the back end. The talent on the back end that's locked in long term, really. I mean, they know who their defense is, and it's going to be for a while. They have a mix of hard shooters, of good skaters, of physical players, right-left guys. So, you know, they have a nice balance there, and something that Pierre Laviolette kind of didn't have after Chris Pronger got hurt there in Philadelphia. So, and didn't have in Carolina, and didn't have with the Islanders, really. So it's the best defense he's had to work with, and then you have the netminding. So this is not an easy team. I think it's probably a good draw for the Jets at the moment because it doesn't pressure them to play as well off defensively and allows them to kind of play at the pace of Nashville. And in terms of, okay, we know they're not Dallas, they're not going to kill us scoring-wise. Not that they can't score, they certainly can, but they don't have the same offensive capabilities. So we can calm down a bit in terms of pressing our game to try and match the skills of the other team and play a little bit more reasonable style based upon our talent level.
Yeah. And you also have, you just mentioned, a couple of injuries there right now. So Gostad and Nystrom, not major injuries, right. But you've got
face-off
the
penalty kill.
Yeah. Yeah, Gostad great in the face-off circle.
Yeah, always has been from Fargo. You have some opportunities, especially when you get those matchups with the third and fourth lines. And again, I realize that Chris Thorburn on the third line is going to stay based on the practice lines. That's mm-hmm. something that I wouldn't expect to stay. I'd expect Thorbs to be back on the fourth line. But I thought that the line of Lowry, Stafford, and Thorburn was pretty good against Dallas. They obviously contributed on the goal that was scored by Jacob Trouba. But it's a situation where you have some opportunities, some younger players, like guys like Colton Sissons and some other guys who are in the lineup right now. You can take advantage of that. So I think the Jets are going to win tonight. I know I'm going out on a limb here.
You know what? I agree with you.
I think that the Jets are sick and tired of losing, and I think even though this Nashville Predators team is not going to be easy to beat, I'm not saying the Jets are going to beat them 5-1.
No.
I do think they'll beat them by a couple goals, but I think that this game is ripe. This Saturday night game is ripe for the Jets to take. They got to turn it around here, especially with not an easy game coming up against the St. Louis Blues on Monday either. And even though the homestand is a little bit easier with teams like Arizona and Colorado, Arizona's playing pretty well, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to turn it around, and I think they'll be able to get 3 or 4 goals past Rene, even though it doesn't look like you're going to a lot of the time. But I do think the Jets are going to come out with a big effort tonight.
Remember, they're playing Nashville, who just lost to the Leafs, and they played Dallas, who lost to the Leafs before. So not teams that are resting on their laurels by any means.
No, and if anything motivates a team, it generally is losing to the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Predators, of course, lost in a shootout on Thursday night to the Leafs. Should make mention of the Jets' defensive pairings entering tonight's game. They're the same as we saw at the end of the game versus Dallas, which is what we spoke about, actually, on Wednesday's NHL mm-hmm. This Week show, where we have seen, you know, Toby Enstrom and Tyler Myers get back together as a pairing. Ben Chiarot and Dustin Byfuglien, when they had so much success earlier in the season last year, mm-hmm. and really for a large portion of the season, they get back together as a pairing. And the Stuart Trouba pairing, which has really been consistent for the last couple of years, is going to remain together. I'm not surprised by this. I mean, we talked about it on Wednesday. I'm surprised it's taken this long, but there does seem to be a comfort level. And the Jets did, you know, do seem to play better defensively. At least Ben Chiarot, I thought, had a better game when he was back with Dustin Byfuglien on Thursday night against Dallas.
Well, he seemed a little more comfortable, and the team seemed to play better when those matchups, when those players got paired back up. And you saw kind of Enstrom and Myers play a lot against Seguin, a little bit of Chiarot and Byfuglien. The coaching staff is keeping Stewart and Trouba together and is really protecting them from top talent right now, which shows you how they feel about their game. I think Jacob Trouba is the key to this defense in terms of defensive play. And we said before, you know, the defense would need to play better as a six-man unit, and the forwards need to help. I mean, there were mistakes from Patan and Stafford and different guys last game that you might not see on the score sheet, but certainly affected the goals. But Jacob Trouba was the best, in my mind, best offensive defenseman on this team at the middle of last year, in December of last year. And now he doesn't resemble that player, and I certainly think he can get back to that level. But I think it's imperative that he does for this team to be able to match up as they want to with the opposition.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that, Rich. When Trouba was on his game, we talked about it mm-hmm. last year. I mean, mm-hmm. you could say that he was a top 20 defenseman. And I think that goal for Jacob Trouba against the Dallas Stars was huge because it was his first goal of the year. He wasn't getting a lot going offensively. And I thought Tyler Myers was really good, too. It's no surprise here. as you mentioned, Drew, we talked about it last week. Mm-hmm. These D pairings were the D pairings for the Jets against the Ducks in the playoffs and leading up to the playoffs. Those were the most consistent D pairings. So it's no surprise that Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy have gone back to those D pairings. And, you know, as far as the forwards go, the only real change is that Thorburn is going to stay on the third line. Burmistrov is going to stay on the fourth line. And I think especially if you can get that Scheifele-Ehlers-Perreault line matched up against the Yarncroc line of the Nashville Predators with Hodgson, I think if you can get some of those mismatches...
That'd be tough on the road.
I know it'll be tough, Richie, but I think if you can get some of those lines out there against Nashville's bottom two lines, which, as we mentioned, are missing a couple of veterans in Gostad and Nystrom. Unless those guys are back, I'm not sure. We'll have to ask Willie Donick. But right now they're out. At least they didn't play last game. But if you can get a couple of those mismatches, I think the Jets have the advantage as far as forwards go.
I wonder if you don't see the blender out, if they don't score more than one, if they're down or don't score more than one goal through halfway through this game. I would expect the blender to be out, to be honest with you.
From Paul Maurice.
Mm-hmm. He's not bringing the blender out to make a smoothie.
Or a margarita, yeah. Let me ask you this, Rich. Looking at it from Peter Laviolette's perspective, you know, does he want to send... He's got last change, of course, being at home. Does he have a forward line he wants to deploy against the Jets line, or is he not looking at line, matching up very much, given the sort of Predators' balanced offensive scoring and
the Jets are defending right now? I'm not sure he's that concerned about the matchups. Mm-hmm. He probably sees vulnerabilities in all three pairings, to be honest with you. In terms of forwards, I mean, I think Peter Laviolette's probably mainly concerned about getting his top pairing, which is, of course, Weber and Josi. Mm-hmm. I would assume out against the Little line. And then they have the defensive depth to be able to handle the other lines. And obviously the Jets' second line is struggling right now. You saw a little bit of a different look at the end of the game last on Thursday. So I think that's his primary concern, that matchup. Anything else, I would expect he'll be okay with.
Yeah, and then you're going to see the Scheifele-Ehlers-Perreault line against Barrett Jackman and Seth Jones. And, speaking of players who had good games, Mark Scheifele, I thought, had a lot of good chances. He was going to the net. He was deflecting pucks. I thought he was going to get a goal there against Dallas. I would look for that line to contribute.
And
Ehlers, too, had a beautiful pass to Tyler Myers on the Jets' third goal that I don't think got enough appreciation. It was a really nice little backhand pass to Myers, who made a really nice shot.
If Ehlers does draw, if they do draw against that Jackman-Jones pairing, and you'd expect that they would see quite a lot of action there, you have to watch for Ehlers to be able to burn Jackman wide or at least take advantage of him inside out because of the speed factor.
The Predators are the fifth best team in the NHL when it comes to 5-on-5 goals against. They've only given up 22 goals in a 5-on-5 situation so far.
Yeah, it's good for the Jets. They're going to cheat less.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Willie Donick is going to join us. He's the Predators play-by-play voice on 102.5 The Game in Nashville. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, and this segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Willie Donick. Willie is the Nashville Predators play-by-play voice on 102.5 The Game in Nashville. Willie, good morning, or good afternoon, rather, and thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be with you guys. Thank you.
Our pleasure as always, Willie. Brought you on, obviously, to talk about the Jets and the Predators, their first meeting to start this year in Nashville later on this evening. You know, we were talking before we brought you on last segment that, you know, a couple of us in the room here sort of thought that the Predators would take a step back after last year's impressive performance under Peter Laviolette. It certainly hasn't been the case. 9-3-3 so far this year, 21 points in their first 15 games. Are you surprised that this Predators team has sort of picked up where they left off in the regular season last season, or in the regular season last year?
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you look at the season last year for the Predators, they were, for 60 games, arguably the best team in the NHL. I think at one point were 41-13-7, if I remember correctly. And then they dipped a little bit. In the last quarter of the season, they leveled off. I thought then played very well in the series against Chicago, despite the fact they didn't have Shea Weber for most of the series. They also didn't have Mike Fisher for most of the series. Lost a couple of games, as you guys know. I mean, the same way for the Jets. Games that could have gone either way. That's hockey in the playoffs. So I think the expectations were pretty high. I think they thought they were for real coming into this year, and they've been able to, pick up where they left off at the beginning of last year. Their record is very similar this year as it was at the beginning of last year after this many games.
Willie, Philip Forsberg was obviously a huge part of the reason why the Nashville Predators made the playoffs last year, was one of the top rookie scorers, led the Nashville Predators in scoring. This year he's only got 2 goals and he hasn't scored in a month. Is he going through that sophomore slump? I know players hate to hear that. Or is he just not getting the bounces?
I think it's more he's not getting the bounces. I really feel like he's been a force each and every game. For whatever reason, it's just not going in. If you look at his analytics, they're very good. They're as good as anybody's on the team. He gets his shot off. He hasn't been able to score on that wrist shot of his as often as it was last year. I'm not sure if goalies maybe have a little better feel for it, if he's not getting quite as many looks from the same spots. But when you watch him, he wins possession battles. He does everything that he needs to do to get in position to score. And so I feel like it'll come. And Peter Laviolette feels the same way. I don't think anybody's really panicked about it, especially as long as the team as a whole continues to get wins.
And you look at it, I mean, the Predators are pretty good position, really, considering Craig Smith has not really been on the board much, 3 points. And you look at Colin Wilson with only 6 points. A bunch of the guys that contributed last year, even Mike Ribeiro with only 8 points in 15 games. The team hasn't had production from those guys like they did, yet they're still succeeding.
Yeah, it's interesting. Those are other good examples, especially Craig Smith. Craig Smith has been wearing it out in terms of shots on goal, scoring chances. He has had some incredibly bad luck, I think, or run into some really good goaltenders. And the Predators really emphasize, Peter Laviolette especially, shot attempts, scoring chances, and he does not really put pressure on guys like Craig Smith or Colin Wilson to say, hey, you've got to score more goals. Obviously, he wants them to. Philip Forsberg in the same category. But he looks at those numbers in terms of shot attempts, scoring chances. As long as they're getting the chances, it feels like over the long haul, they'll get enough goals. And the defensemen have picked up the slack to really help the Predators get enough goals to stay afloat with the top two lines really not hot right now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Willie Donick. Willie is the Nashville Predators play-by-play voice on 102.5 The Game Radio in Nashville. Willie, wanted to ask you about Matthias Ekholm. He signed the big 6-year contract extension about a month ago, give or take a couple days here or there. Obviously, the Predators have so much, stability now on that back end with all their defensemen under, fairly long-term deals. Barrett Jackman is the most is the closest one to UFA. Seth Jones an RFA, but he's going to get signed, obviously, there. Is this stability on the back end there, driving the play of the Predators' excellent defense?
Well, I think that is where you start. There's no question that Pekka is a big part of the equation. They still feel like he is in the prime of his career, so it's important to try to give yourself a chance to win while you still have him for a few more years before he gets up into those mid-30s where you start to worry if there's going to be a drop-off. So I think it's become the backbone of the team, defenseman 1-6. Barrett Jackman has been a great addition, a perfect complement to the other types of defensemen. If you watch the Predators when they're playing well, a guy like Matthias Ekholm can jump into the play just as well as a Roman Josi, a Seth Jones. Ryan Ellis can do it as well. Mobile puck carriers that Mike Babcock, I thought, put it well the other day. He says they make the team faster than they actually are just because of their ability to move the puck and create. So I think that is where you start when you start asking why are the Predators an effective team?
Willie, this is a little bit off topic, but Kevin Fiala, who is the Nashville Predators' top prospect, he was only taken a couple of spots after Tobias Enstrom in the 2014 NHL draft. He's struggled big time in the AHL, and he was recently suspended. How surprised are you that he's been struggling?
Well, I'm surprised he got suspended. That was interesting news to me. Apparently there was a gesture made to the opposite bench, was caught, and that cost him two games. I think it's somewhat natural. Kevin Fiala spent all summer in Nashville, and he was determined to make the team. He expected to make the team. He's a talented young kid, and he's a guy that I think sometimes he's on the borderline of, he's so confident, it probably makes him great in a lot of ways, but it probably cost him. I think he just believes he's going to be a great player, and he believes it needs to happen right now. He worked very hard over the summer. He asked everybody, what do I need to do to make this team this year? Remember, he's only 19 years old. He didn't make the team out of camp. He's still struggling a little bit with the system of the game, some of the nuances of two-way play. And I think he was just crushed when they sent him to Milwaukee. But he just wasn't effective in preseason. He was clearly beaten out. And I think he's had that little lull where you feel sorry for yourself. You're saying, why am I here? I'm supposed to be in the NHL. And I think it's affected his play for sure. I do think, though, in time, he will come around like a lot of guys. And there's still a long way to go in his development. He's so young.
You know, Willie, it's interesting in Winnipeg. I'm sure you've read and heard about it in preparing for today's game. The Jets lead the league in minor penalties taken with 75. And you look at Nashville, and they're 24th in the league with 54 minor penalties, so certainly doing a better job. It's one of those stats where you'd rather be lower rather than higher. What's the reason for that? Considering, you know, Peter Laviolette came from Philadelphia, and his teams were not known for being the most disciplined.
Well, I think, you know, very simply, they're not a team that gets in a lot of fights. They don't. I think they've gotten more physical. I think you had a guy like Jackman. I think this will probably be the first time a lot of Jets fans see Austin Watson play tonight. He gives them a little more size and crash on the fourth line. He's been a nice addition to play more physical. But they're not a team that takes too many penalties. I think part of it is the mobile defenseman. And the possession, they've become a little bit more of a puck possession team than they have. So they've done a good job. The problem is that other than the other night, they had been giving up a bunch of power play goals. They had given up six in the previous three games before the game on Thursday against Toronto, and I think they killed off both chances there. So staying out of the box is going to be important for them.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Willie Donick, the voice of the Nashville Predators on 102.5 The Game in Nashville. Willie, last season the Predators had great success with Mike Ribeiro as their reclamation project. They signed him to a contract extension this offseason. This past offseason they get Cody Hodgson. He's bought out in Buffalo. A kid with a ton of talent, but he's never been able to put it all together. We saw him briefly here in Winnipeg as a member of the Manitoba Moose before he went on to Vancouver and then to Buffalo. How has he looked so far as a member of the Nashville Predators?
I would say he's looked okay. He certainly hasn't hurt them. He hasn't gotten a chance to play on the power play at all, which I know is a skill set that he has. He has moved from center over to wing. They started him off at center on the third line. He's now on the same line with the same guys pretty much. Cali Yarncroak will center the third line. They've been trying different ways to get more scoring from the third line. The third line has been the same since the beginning of last year with different pieces. To start off with guys like Derek Roy, Olli Jokinen at the start of last year, and they're getting the same thing. Solid play, you know, analytically it's a decent line, but not a lot of hitting the back of the net. And so Cody Hodgson has one goal and one assist. I think they would tell you he's been responsible. But I think a lot of Predator fans are saying, you know, is there something more here? Can they get more from that? Or is he going to be the next Derek Roy, Olli Jokinen to where they try to replace him with somebody else to find a different formula there that might get more scoring?
Willie, we got to ask you about Shea Weber recently playing his 700th career NHL game, and it's been with one team, which is pretty rare in this day and age. I guess the two-part question for you is, how nice is it to see a player of Shea Weber's caliber stay with one team and know that he's going to be with one team for possibly the rest of his career? And how impressive is it that in the last seven full NHL seasons, he's only missed 16 games?
Pretty impressive. And I think if you look at his play earlier this year, I think a lot of his start probably had to do with the fact that he was going through a pretty extensive rehabilitation process, the dislocated kneecap that he suffered in the playoff series against Chicago. You know, he comes into training camp, doesn't talk about it at all, doesn't really miss any time. But I think it did take him a few weeks in training camp to start getting back to his natural mobility. But you've really seen it in the last few weeks. His game is picking up. His production has picked up accordingly. And so I think now we're starting to see the Norris level play that we've become used to.
Final question, Willie. You know, David Poile is, I'd say, probably a pretty conservative GM, but has been one to make moves when he thinks his team has a real opportunity to make a run in the playoffs. Do you see him kind of having that mindset this year, considering the pieces on the back end, the goaltending, and maybe the forward or two they are away from being arguably a favorite in the Western Conference?
I think that is something to watch for. I think he really likes what's coming up through the system. For years and years, the Predators had all kinds of trouble finding forwards. Mm-hmm. They've developed a ton of defensemen, lots of defensemen. And we've talked about it before. They've tied up the guys that they want for the next several years. Seth Jones will be the next guy that they get done. It just depends on what number they end up agreeing to. But they're going to invest in Seth Jones. So I think they have some pieces to trade if they want to go get a veteran guy. And that would be the thing that I think any Predator fan would tell you. Can they find an impact number one center that would really put them where they want to be in the top six forwards and maybe bump down Mike Fisher and Mike Ribeiro one slot or some formula that maybe gives it another guy that the other team has to really game plan for. So we'll see how that develops. I think they'll be patient. I don't think they feel like they've got to do it today. But as the season goes on, I think that's something to watch for.
Willie Donick is the voice of the Nashville Predators on 102.5 The Game in Nashville. Willie, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us, and have a good call this evening between the Jets and the Preds.
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Willie. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll discuss the Winnipeg Jets and their struggling power play.
They will get the puck back toward the line. Bufflin can't hold it. Sevier will get to it at center ice. A lead pass here for Fiddler. He's got a breakaway moving in. And Vernon Fiddler went to the backhand of the puck, slipped off the end of his stick. Back out in front as Fiddler got the puck for Sevier. He let a shot go, kicked away by Pavlik. And the Jets having problems again with the power play here, giving up short-handed chances. They gave up a shorty in Minnesota on Tuesday night.
Short-handed chances are one thing. Lack of goals on the power play is another. The Winnipeg Jets currently struggling on the power play. One for their last 20, a whopping 5% success rate on the power play for the Winnipeg Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Ezzy, before we talk about the power play, a slight clarification to one of the questions you asked Willie Donick during the course of the interview.
Well, it's funny. During that interview, you gave me a weird look, and I was thinking to myself, what's Drew giving me a weird look for, even though you give me a few weird looks throughout the course of a show? But
regularly.
No, I asked Willie Donick about Kevin Fiala, who was their 2014 draft pick. If you were listening, you probably were also scratching your head. I meant to say that he was drafted two spots after Nikolai Ehlers, not Tobias Enstrom. I know they're both small players, but Fiala was 11th overall in 2014. Mm-hmm. Ehlers was number 9 in 2014, so I just want to correct myself. Enstrom was not drafted in 2014. I think he was drafted in 2003 or something like that.
2003 in the dear departed 8th round of the NHL draft.
Pretty
which
good
no
draft.
Longer, which no longer exists.
That was a really good draft, 03, with Getzlaff, Perry, Parise. We can go on and on.
Enstrom is an 8th round pick. It's a pretty, we never sort of think about that as one of those great late round gems that you usually attribute to the Detroit Red Wings more than anybody else. But Toby Enstrom is a key member of the Winnipeg Jets power play, probably the second unit on the power play, more so than the first unit now that they've been going with the four forwards, one defenseman setup. But 5% success rate on the power play certainly isn't going to get it done for the Winnipeg Jets. It's not going to remain that poor for the course of the entire season. But you know, why is it struggling right now? And in your mind, what is the number one power play unit, the ideal number one power play unit for the Winnipeg Jets look like?
Well, I mean, I feel like we have this talk annually.
We do.
I mean, the talent hasn't really, I mean, aside from, I mean, you have Drew Stafford in there now and Nikolaj Ehlers and Patan. So if you're talking about the second unit, that's what you have. If you're looking at the first unit, they've converted their setup into the umbrella, kind of as they had in the middle of last year. We talked about different formats that might work. I mean, I don't know. If you're going to play those five guys together, I'm not sure what other format you want to use. You have Bufflin at the top, the top of the blue line. He's got a great shot. You're using Perreault on the half boards, and he's got good vision. The problem you have is that if you're slanting the power play towards Bufflin and his big shot, then it's who you put in the middle and who can shoot the puck. So, but by that I mean, how many options do you have? If you're Matthew Perreault and you're on your off wing and you're looking at Dustin Bufflin, he's your best shot option. If you're going to play a guy who shoots right, whether it's Little or Wheeler on the far on the weak side, they have to be able to really rip that puck, right? Like, you don't have an Ovechkin on the other side.
Right.
Okay, I mean, Little can shoot the puck, but you don't have an Ovechkin on the other side. And then you have Ladd, who's a lefty, so if you put him in the middle, it's a weird angle for him. And then Ladd, who is a better option of a one-timer, that means the puck's coming from the other side.
So
I mean, you know, that's fine, and even Perreault can shoot the puck with his wrist shot on the offside is great, but then Bufflin's no threat because he's got to turn his body when he receives a pass. So the personnel, as we've said before, isn't ideal for a top-end power play. You could argue the talent probably isn't ideal for that either. So long and the short of it is I'm not sure how much you change here, Drew.
Yeah, and we've seen, Nikolaj Ehlers. Speaking of Nikolaj Ehlers, we've seen him play the point.
You mean Toby Enstrom.
Yeah, exactly. Nikolaj Ehlers, who was drafted in 2003.
Yeah
Ehlers has played the point. I remember the Montreal game, even though they didn't score, he was quite prominent on the point. I think Nikolaj Ehlers is a guy that can have a significant impact. Richie, by the way, I'm not concerned about this at all. A couple of years ago, the Jets had a bottom five power play. So they were 23rd, 24th, 25th. I guess that's not bottom five, bottom 10, whatever. Now they're kind of, what are they, 20th or something like that, 18th. I'm not concerned about it. And the reason why I'm not concerned about it, because you have a lot of different weapons. Richie mentions Buff. They're most likely always going to put Buff out there. And I think Buff is the most effective, Richie, when he's coming off of the point and rotating with Blake Wheeler. You see that quite often, where Blake Wheeler will play the half wall and he'll come and circle around and then take Buff's position on the point, and then Buff will go and possibly come off for a scoring chance off the boards.
But Wheeler's not a great shooting threat. That's a problem.
Just saying, then you get Buff out of that position, that kind of stagnant position where he's just blasting the shot. By the way, he has the most feared shot in the NHL. So Buff is one of their biggest weapons on the power play, along with Wheeler and Ehlers and Little and Scheifele. I mean, I think they're going to get out of this funk, Drew. And as Rich mentioned, it's still the same personnel out there. And Tobias Enstrom is a guy that they always used to put out there with Buff on the first power play unit. Problem with Enstrom, as we know, with that long stick, he struggles because he doesn't have that good of a shot. But he has an excellent ability to quarterback the power play.
I don't mind the Ehlers idea in terms of if you want to swap him with Perreault.
Well, I was going to say,
mind that idea?
Well, he's arguably the most skilled player on the Jets. I mean, I realize he's 19 years old,
but
he can also
skills.
Blast the puck. Yeah, we saw him blast the puck for his first NHL goal against the New York Rangers at MSG, and we've seen him score other beautiful goals, too, with that good shot of his, whether it's the slapper or the wrist shot. So I think Ehlers should be out there for the first power play. Another guy going back
to
the...
Taking off Perreault? That's what you're taking off?
Most likely, considering
the top unit guys.
It depends, Richie, if they stick with four forwards and one D. Because if you're sticking with four forwards and one D, you're not taking Buff off.
You're not taking Buff off.
And
no, of course.
To me, another guy that should be getting more power play time, we've talked about this for 3 years, is Jacob Trouba. To me, Jacob Trouba, he gets some second power play looks.
Not the way he's playing right now, though.
He's starting to play a little bit more better offensively. You know, he got the goal against Dallas. I think, to me, he's a guy that can really add an element, especially his ability, Rich, his skating ability, his lateral skating ability, his ability to jump up into the play. So he's another guy for me. But I wouldn't get too worried about it, because whether it's last game versus Dallas or you're going back to the kind of Ottawa-Toronto games, they were getting chances, Drew. They were having sustained pressure in the offensive zone. They were getting their looks. They were getting shots. So I know they're 1-for-20 or whatever it is right now, but I wouldn't be too concerned about it. I bet they'll get it going, and wouldn't be surprised if they get a couple power play goals tonight against Nashville.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, the Jets, for the longest time, you know, you know, they relied on Ladd, Little, and Wheeler because they didn't have very many other offensive weapons.
And those are still your, top line guys.
Right. I have no argument there. But now they have more offensive weapons. You have Scheifele, who's really developed. I mean, his shot is one of the is a very good wrist shot.
Yep.
And, you know, it's heavy. It's hard. It's a quick release. Everything about it has developed since he's been in the NHL. Drew Stafford's an offensive guy. You know, Ehlers, we just talked about. Why don't you maybe mix and match a little bit more?
Because we know your first power play unit always gets way more time than your second.
Well, I know. So maybe you mix up the first power play unit a little bit, and so it's less predictable. Because right now everybody knows what's, you know, you watch the Jets' first power play unit, you know what's coming. And most teams can defend it.
Everybody knows what's coming, though, Drew. That's a video these days. It's whether you have the skill to affect your what you're trying to do.
Right, but if you don't ever change things up, you know, at some point in time you are going to... at some point in time, there's a reason why in the NFL they put in new plays on a week by week basis.
Right, sure.
It's because they haven't been scouted.
Yeah, but I mean, hockey's different that way. You're going to have your PK meeting for the before the game, and you're going to come in and you're going to know what they're going to do. And there's a skill level and there's a fluidity to the game that makes it a little bit less predictable. And you're chasing in certain places that you don't plan to chase and all that. And I mean, some of that's just, I mean, I guess what I'm saying there is it's really just pure skill at the end of the day that usually dictate. I mean, look at Dallas has a top power play. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the top power plays because I think this will illustrate my point, okay? The top power plays. Now, right now, surprisingly enough, you have a team like Boston, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's up there. But you have Dallas, Montreal. Look, what do you have here on these power plays? Dallas, Montreal, Boston, even the Sabres and then the Panthers. So you have some teams, I think, over the course of the year, the pure skill will come out. But look at Dallas, Klingberg, quarterbacks that unit, okay? Mm-hmm. You have Subban, quarterbacks that unit. I mean, Boston, you have Chara, obviously, plays a big role there. Even Buffalo, I mean, Cody Franzen moves the puck really nice, and Ristolainen's a guy who's moved the puck better. And Florida, you have Campbell, and you have Ekblad. So the Jets have the Bufflin part of it, okay? So then the question is, the other talent around, is it up to par with some of those teams? You could argue, maybe, but I mean, the Jets, like, Ladd, Little, and Wheeler are real good players, and I think Wheeler is probably the most skilled of the bunch. The Ladd and Little are close, but and Perreault is a good player. I mean, is that the top unit in the league? No, not by any means at the top unit in the league. I'm not overly concerned about the power play. Teams are going to know what they're going to want to do, but and then they're going to have some breaks and they're going to have not have some breaks. Do you tweak it a bit and throw maybe an Ehlers in there? Sure. Do you completely change it up? Well, you can like completely change it up. Have fun going into the room with Paul Maurice saying, here, three top players are not going to be playing on the top unit.
I'm not advocating for completely changing it up and, you know, scrapping everything and going back to the drawing board. I'm just saying that, you know, for a team that has more trigger men now on it than ever before, I wouldn't mind seeing a first power play unit that deploys more of those trigger men.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
I know what your point is going to be. Your point is going to be, who are you taking off? Are you telling Ladd and Wheeler that they're not getting play time?
That's right.
And you're 100% right that
take them off the power play, you probably lose the room.
You're right. It's more of a political thing than it is a skill thing, you know, in terms of why
and
you
they're
can't
both skilled
do that.
Too. But yeah. I mean, in terms of taking, I mean, you take Ladd off the first power play unit in his contract year,
it's done.
Well, I think there's something else to factor in here, Drew. Mark Scheifele is really struggling in the faceoff circle, and he's about 10% below Brian Little right now. And I'm the biggest Mark Scheifele fan there is. I think he's having a great year. Maybe he's not getting as many goals as he'd like, and we know how good his shot has been. He's put on weight. He's looked better than he's ever looked in his NHL career. But I think I don't know how big of a factor that's playing in. Brian Little going out there for the first power play unit now at about 51% on faceoffs, whereas Scheifele's at 43%.
And he's better than Scheifele.
So I think that's factoring in. But to your point, Drew, I think to possibly maybe remove someone off of that top power play unit, whether it's Ladd or Wheeler, and maybe giving Ehlers some more power play time or giving someone else some more power play time.
The only guy you're taking off is Perreault, is he?
Or Perreault.
The only guy you're taking off.
And I think, you know, if it's Perreault on the half boards and giving Ehlers some opportunity to get that big shot off, I think it's worth looking at.
And I think the only thing is, to Azzy's point, I think if anybody you're taking off, it's Perreault. And the only guy you're replacing with, to me, is Ehlers, because you have too many red-handed shooting guys after that. Stafford.
Yeah, you've already got Wheeler on the left side.
Exactly. So you have Stafford, which is where you'd want a guy like that. But Stafford, Scheifele, you have too many right-handed shooting guys. So either, and you're not putting Lowry up there. So it's Perreault or Ehlers, and I think the rest of it stays
the same.
They'll
get it going. I think it's a little bit much ado about nothing. They are struggling, but I do think they'll get it going because you do have a lot of talented forwards out there, and I do think they'll get it going tonight against Nashville.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss steroids and is it an issue in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Steroids and sports are no laughing matter, but this segment is brought to you by a funny place, and that's Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Ezzy, you purchased some Rumors tickets yesterday, you told me.
I did. I purchased tickets to Donnell Rawlings,
yeah.
Who's coming up in January. Really liked his skit on Dave Chappelle's show, if you remember it. It was Ashy Larry. He's a really funny guy, and I was checking out some of his YouTube clips online. So, yeah, I picked up a pair of tickets to that, and it'll be a nice way to get over the doldrums of the cold January winter blues in Winnipeg, right?
Absolutely. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Rick Westhead, TSN's senior correspondent, continues to do fantastic work, and in partnership with CTV's W5, has produced a fascinating look at the use of steroids and the availability of steroids in Canada, not necessarily at the professional hockey levels, but really from the grassroots, from high school all the way through, amateur bodybuilding, all the way through pretty much in any walk of life, a look at the availability of steroids. Here's a quote from a steroid distributor that Rick had the opportunity to interview for the piece. I had elite hockey players who knew the testing schedule out of season and know enough to take drugs like EPO that require a blood test to catch. They know the tests for those drugs are more expensive and less likely to be used by sports leagues. Does the NHL, publicly, and based on what, they announce, they say, we don't have a steroid problem. Truthfully, do you believe the NHL does have a steroid problem that they're putting their head in the sand about?
It's very difficult to tell, Drew, because the NHL's only had a performance-enhancing drug policy in place since 2005. And since 2005, there have only been a couple of players that have tested positive. Sean Hill in 2007, and if you remember, Zenon Konopka. And both of those players, it wasn't clear what exactly they were testing positive for, or at least there were some denials mm-hmm. that it was growth hormone or steroids, and it was a combination of other stimulants. But the point being, there have only been two NHL players who have been caught. And as far as the NHL goes, I think it's more a question of, is their performance-enhancing drug policy tough enough? Because as we know, NHL players can be tested randomly, Drew. I believe three times, if I'm not mistaken, according to the current CBA. And you can be tested throughout the season. Now, the issue from what I can tell from Rick Westhead's research and other research is that there are certain drugs that aren't tested for in the NHL. So certain things that can, increase your oxygen levels and other stimulants, right? So as far as the question goes, Drew, it's tough to tell because even though there is that performance-enhancing drug policy, it's considered by some to be a little bit lax and not really test frequently enough and to not test the right thing. So, I remember, I don't know how long ago it was, Dick Pound, if you remember, who was part of the World Anti-Doping Agency, mm-hmm. I think he speculated there might be as many as 20 or 30% of NHLers on steroids. And I remember at the time that was denied vehemently by Gary Bettman. For the obvious reasons, there was not a lot of proof, but Dick Pound was somebody who isn't someone just to throw out those types of numbers. So it's difficult to say. I know everybody wants a percentage in this day and age. Everybody wants the number. How many guys are using performance-enhancing drugs, right? Is it 10%? Is it 30%? We don't know. But what we do know right now is with the policy that's currently in place, many professionals and critics are saying that there isn't enough testing. So I think that's the issue. Should the NHL and the NHLPA be looking a little bit more closely at certain drugs, and are NHL players really cheating and getting kind of through the cracks? Because as we know, players are able to take drugs, I guess, at certain times, Rich,
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
by the time they've run their course, you can't detect them, right? So I don't know the answer to that, Drew. I would think that the nature of hockey, it's very different than baseball or other sports. I wouldn't think that there's a large percentage of guys that are juicing, but I also wouldn't be naive to think that there aren't players using performance-enhancing drugs as well.
That's a fair way to put it. I don't think a ton of guys in the league are on steroids, but I don't think no players in the league are on steroids either.
So it's more than the two that have been caught in the last decade or so.
I would suspect it's like that way. I think in all these leagues, a lot of not everybody's going to get caught. You're never going to know what the percentage is of players who are violating the rules. You know, there's so many advances in terms of masking these things and all that.
No.
And let's be honest with you. Let's be honest with each other. I don't think any players association that's headed up by Donald Fehr exactly has a great track record for catching guys who have violated, or maybe not violated, but have used drugs to their advantage, put it that way.
It's a good point.
Let me ask you this. I mean,
this it's not really a big revelation. I'm not sure why it's getting so much attention.
That there's drug use in sports. You're
it's
saying
like it's a sport. I mean,
yeah.
Have you ever gone down and looked at a football field? The players, the size of the players. That's normal.
Yeah. Well, they.
And I don't think hockey, the bulk, I don't think helps you as much as it does in football, for example, or even in baseball. But there are players that it does help, I'm sure.
If players believe that it helps them get back onto the ice or onto the field, you know, recovering from an injury.
I think that's less the use of it as much as it is just to make them stronger and better.
Well, let me ask you this then. I mean, it's fairly apparent, you know, that there, you know, any player that wants to take steroids in the NHL, the ability to not be caught is fairly, you know, the loopholes that are in the system are fairly obvious. You know that you know you can easily find out when you're going to be tested or when you can cycle on and cycle off and things about that. Doesn't that tell you that the NHL doesn't really care if they did have a steroid problem?
No, it tells you that the NHL and NHLPA is collectively cannot reach an agreement that maybe is in line with what the NHL wants.
Do you think the NHL cares?
Doesn't want a huge controversy. First of all, is it leading to any more goals? No, it's probably leading to more. Well, you don't think that many more goals. It might lead to more concussions, which the NHL probably wouldn't want to have, and they wouldn't want to have the negative publicity that comes with it. But the players' union is concerned with defending the players' rights, at the expense of those things I just mentioned.
Well, the
not
players...
goals, but the possible increased risk of injury. I mean, think about it. If you're the NFLPA or the Baseball Players Association, you're doing a disservice. Like, the Baseball Players Association did a disservice to me, to their non-steroid-taking players during the steroid years, because those guys weren't using it and were making less money than all the guys who were using it. They didn't care. They needed the terrible media pressure to be able to have any policy implemented at all. Sure, it wasn't against the rules of baseball, but it was against the law to be purchasing it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Drew, to answer your question, I think the NHL cares, but I think the question, again, is do they care enough? And what I mean by that is over the last couple of years in the collective bargaining agreement since the last lockout, the most recent lockout, they expanded testing to the offseason and playoffs, which they didn't do previous to that after 2005, and the list of prohibited substances has gone up. But they are only allowed to test a certain amount of players, and, for example, human growth hormone isn't considered illegal. Well, so, I mean, you have certain substances that players can still take like mm-hmm. that, which is performance enhancing, which is not illegal. So I don't think the NHL is doing enough, to be honest with
well,
you.
Well, exactly to my point there, as you know, what you said is, you know, they're not, you know, they can't test for obvious drugs that serve to enhance players. So, you know, it's like you can't be half pregnant. You're either against drugs or you're not against drugs. And I understand that it's a negotiation with the union and everything else. Like, you know, everything involved the NHL has to be approved by the union. But I'm not sure why that is when it's a case of either something's legal or something is illegal in the course of the law. There's no secondary laws that say, well, you're a professional hockey player, so you are allowed to take steroids. It's either legal or illegal in society. So I don't know why the NHLPA feels as though they can violate those laws. To some extent, I also don't know that I care if players are on steroids. They're grown men. If they want to take,
you may not care, well, and that's the whole argument. You may not care, but the guy who's competing for the fourth line left wing spot, who's not on steroids, competing with the guy who's on the fourth line left wing and is on steroids, probably does care.
So why isn't he putting the pressure on the?
You don't know that he isn't.
You're right. I don't know that he isn't, but then, you know.
I mean, baseball. I mean, that obviously it took the media pressure and then guys inside the organization to say, "Hey, hold on a second here." I mean, who are you representing?
Well, they're representing they represent the cheaters.
Well, no, they represent everybody.
Oh,
but I mean, who are they speaking
do.
For?
But, you know,
that's changed now. But let's just say Donald Fehr wasn't exactly easy to sway on that. I mean, it was even the late Michael
Wiener
who actually made the
Michael
changes. I don't
Weiner?
Remember. I think it was Wiener who was terrible. Passed away very early. But I believe he was the one who actually made the change. So we're talking about a league. again, we know that Donald Fair is as good a negotiator as you're going to get, and certainly has a sterling reputation when it comes to representing sports players' unions. But he does not have a good reputation when it comes to implementing drug programs and drug testing programs. He just doesn't.
And guys, the players, the NHL, the NHLPA should care whether or not players are taking steroids, because they're horrible for your health. I mean, use steroids in the increase in chances of having a heart attack or a whole list of different health problems increases. They're terrible for your health.
Well, no, absolutely.
For that perspective, it if you take these types of drugs, you're cutting off years of your life. So you should care from a human interest perspective that it's awful for your sport if you have players. But again, going back to what I said before, I do not think that the NHL has a steroid problem or a performance-enhancing drug problem. I'm not naive to think that some guys aren't taking this stuff, but there's no evidence as it stands right now to think that there's a large percentage of these guys taking drugs.
You know, and I appreciate your optimism, Ezzy. I guess I'm more of a cynic. I think that probably I think a lot of athletes in all of the professional sports are still taking steroids and performance enhancing drugs that are just more advanced than the testing. And that's always going to be the case, is that the drugs are always going to be more advanced than the testing. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look back onto some on-ice performance. The Detroit Red Wings, they re-signed Justin Abdelkader. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Just really thrilled, you know, obviously, to play my first game as a Red Wings player, and now to, you know, sign an extension to hopefully end my career here in Detroit is a dream come true for me, and it's been a special time, and, you know, now I'm just kind of looking forward to, now that it's, you know, kind of put in the rearview mirror, now I can get back to work and do what I can to help the team win.
That's Justin Abdelkader, Detroit Red Wings left wing, as he signed a 7-year contract extension with the Red Wings earlier this week, preventing him from becoming an unrestricted free agent, as he was scheduled to do on July 1. Of 2016. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, Abdelkader signed the big contract extension. As I mentioned, it's 7 years. It's $29.75 million, and it's an average annual value of $4.25 million. A very nice contract for a Michigan boy himself, as he's from Muskegon, Michigan, the Red Wings' former second-round pick back in 2005. Your thoughts on this deal for Abdelkader, Richard?
A little long, I thought, but they're obviously doing that for the purposes of keeping the cap hit down. I don't have an issue with the $4.25 million cap hit. You might say, well, you know, hold on, $4.25 million cap hit. This guy hasn't exactly lit it up aside from having one 23-goal season last year. Before that, he had never scored more than 10 goals. So, you know, I mean, it might raise some eyebrows that he gets the term and he gets a fairly large cap hit. I think the Red Wings see him as a leader on the team. I think they see him as a physical guy who's able to play a little bit different of a style than a lot of their skilled players, a guy who's going to complement their skilled players. I like his game a lot. I know Ezzy does. He goes up and down. He goes to the net. He's played a lot of games. I mean, he hasn't missed more than 12 games over the past 5 seasons. So you have that. In terms of reliability, and, you know, people have some concerns. Johan Franzen has obviously a concussion, has probably ended his career now. Signing a winger, left shooting winger, plays a physical style to a long term deal might have some, might be risky, sure. But I think the Red Wings see even guys who are signed under the old deal, you know, Duncan Keith, guys like that are obviously different level, but lower cap hits allow them to keep the nucleus together. And so, maybe you'd like the cap hit to be 375 or 35, something like that. But I realize also that 28 to 35 is not, you know, your ideal years for a guy who plays a physical style.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to argue with Kenny Holland for the most part. He seems to usually make the right calls.
Yeah, Richie, I've always been a big fan of Justin Abdelkader. And sure, it's maybe a little bit surprising that he gets 7 years just because, as Richie said, he's not a guy that's going to be top 10 or even top 50 really in the NHL in scoring. As Rich mentioned, he had the career year last year. But this is an excellent player. And for the last couple of years now, he's been on that top line with Zetterberg and Datsyuk, even though Datsyuk just came back from injury. But he's been he's been on the left side with Zetterberg for quite some time now. Excellent player. They put him out on the power play. Sometimes they'll put him out on the penalty kill. He actually had a really good year on the power play last year. I forget how many goals he scored. But this is a guy who I think factors in big time, obviously, to the future of the team. And I remember when we had Ken Daniels on last year, who's the play-by-play voice of the Red Wings, he said that he wouldn't be surprised if this is a future captain of the team. He's that impactful on this team. He's a very versatile player, and I think he represents everything that the Detroit Red Wings want to do. They play with speed. He has the ability to play physically as well. I don't know if people appreciate that much about Abdelkader. He'll be the first one in on the forecheck and lay the body for a guy like Zetterberg so he can do his thing, pick up the puck, and set up plays and everything like that. So really good player. And I think you also have to factor in, too, Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk, they're not going to be around forever. I mean, these are guys that are probably in the last 2-3 years of their careers, right? They're in their mid-30s now. So Abdelkader is a guy, I think, that they look at as part of that older leadership group moving forward, because when you consider guys like Tatar and Riley Sheahan and Gustav Nyquist and Dylan Larkin, who's just 19 years old, it's a young team. It's going to get younger, too, by the way. I mean, you have Richie mentioned Franzen, and you have some older players, Cronwall, who are still around. But I think they look at it, and that's part of the reason, Richie, why they locked him up to 7 years as opposed to 5 years, because they see, okay, a few years down the road. And granted, Justin Abdelkader is probably a second liner or a third liner, going forward potentially, because when you put him up there, he plays with more skilled players. So on certain teams, he might not be. But the point is, he has the ability to keep up with the Zetterbergs and the Datsyuks on the first line. He's a really talented guy. So I'm really happy that he got this contract. As you mentioned, Drew, Michigan born and raised. And again, going
Michigan
back to what
State, Grand Rapids, and now Detroit, guy hasn't left Michigan in 10 years.
Going back to what Ken Daniels said, this guy might be a captain once guys like Zetterberg and Datsyuk are gone.
He got a third of his goals last year on the power play, 23 goals last season, 8 of which came on the power play.
I didn't know the number, but I knew that he had a lot of power play goals last year.
Here's Ken Holland talking about the deal. He was asked about the length of the contract, the 7 years. Ken Holland said it was to get him signed. He's 28 years of age, and if he hit the open market and a team wanted to pry him out of Detroit, it's hard to find big people that can score 20 goals. Continuing on, Holland, anytime you do a deal, I don't think it's exactly the deal probably that Abdelkader wanted, and it's probably not exactly the deal that I wanted. We had to find a solution that he could live with and find a solution that we could live with. So it's a case of a general manager looking around probably to some extent, saying, what are my options if I don't sign him? And they're not as good. He's going to either have to give up an asset to get somebody signed, that can do similar things. And he knows him very well. He's been a Michigan guy and a Detroit guy throughout the organization. So, familiarity breeds comfort, as they do like to say.
Abdelkader, in certain respects, reminds me a lot of Chris Kunitz. And he has the ability to play with those skilled players. Obviously, Kunitz makes the Olympic team and has been with Crosby there. Kind of plays a similar game, even though Abdelkader is bigger than Kunitz. But they also have that ability to crash and bang. But they're versatile players that teams really rely on. And you ask anybody on the Detroit Red Wings, ask Mike Babcock. He put Abdelkader out there quite often. That's why you don't stick on the first line of a Mike Babcock team unless you're a good player. So Abdelkader's an underrated player, I believe. And maybe he's not going to be so underrated now that he's got this 7-year contract.
With the money comes expectations, Izzy, and I think that increased expectations. Now this year he should be able to, if he continues to play with Datsyuk now returning on Friday and Zetterberg, he should be able to put up some serious points. And he started off already, had an early hat trick, and has struggled a bit since. But again, when you have so much skill, Nyquist, Tatar, and all the different guys we mentioned, so many of those guys do not play the style he plays.
No, he's on pace right now. He's four. You know, if he was to play the entire season, he'd be on pace to get the 20 goal mark. But you mentioned Richie started off sort of a house on fire, has slowed down. But now that Datsyuk's back, you'd probably expect that. Oh, the Red Wings are getting back to being at full strength. Really, they've been playing without Datsyuk, and they knew that they were going to be without Datsyuk for the first
month.
They've
had a pretty mediocre start. They've been very 500. Yeah. I think they are 500 right now. They've
8-7-1. Yeah. They're seventh actually in the Atlantic Division, which is probably been a more competitive division than people have necessarily thought so far. But actually, I may have got that wrong. Pardon me. They're fourth in the Atlantic Division. I had the wrong column. I had the wrong column clicked on there. So they're right in the heart of the central of the Atlantic Division. And as they get healthier and as they begin to learn more about the style of play that they're going to be playing, you know, this year, and as they get more comfortable with one another, I'd be surprised, especially in the weak Eastern Conference, if the Red Wings didn't continue their playoff streak for another season.
Yeah, he's a very good player, and I think I think he factors in as well with USA Hockey going forward too. He's a guy that might not get that top six forward look, Rich, but he's an excellent player that I think any coach in the NHL would take on his team.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss Sergei Fedorov versus Eric Lindros. One was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. One is hoping to still hear their name announced next year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.